You're back online, but just one moment.
Okay.
Please go ahead, madam. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. So at this point, we're being recorded. In terms of who's on, roll call, I believe Glenn is on, Marilyn's on, Victoria, myself, anybody else join while I was away? No. Okay, well, hopefully Mike and tomorrow will join. What I thought of as an agenda, since I sent out a copy of this and Marilyn just sent out a copy of the piece that I need to fold in this on process, what I was thinking we would do is spend the meeting basically doing a walkthrough of the various points, figure out which of the things I put in there are indeed things that seem to be agreed by, I guess, the three of us at this point, and which of those we're still at variance on, so that I can put them, you know, move things around to the right, add anything that's missing, and then basically have this ready for this afternoon, send out an updated copy for this afternoon, or I guess it's already afternoon in some places, for the 18 UTC Reserve Names Working Group meeting. Does that sound reasonable?
That'd be fabulous. Can I just ask a question, because I'm going to be in the chair for this afternoon? The most important thing that we can do, I think, Aubrey, I'm really going to try to focus time for the groups who haven't had a chance to present at all.
That makes sense.
And I talked to Chuck, and he's in agreement on that, so I just wanted to give you a heads up on that.
Okay, and since I sort of did present at the last one, I certainly don't mind if we're at the end, and if the schedule doesn't allow us to get to us, I won't complain at all.
And my goal is to give you time. I must have been giving you the wrong hint.
Excuse me? I didn't understand, but anyway.
Okay. I'm going to beg both of your patience, if that's all right. I know this is sort of anti-procedure, but because, you know, one should listen to all the calls and what have you, but I may need to ask you to just clarify one or two things.
Four of us on the call. I think, you know, we shouldn't be formal about this at all and should just try and make sure that we've got recommendations. But feel free to ask anything. And I know you know, Marilyn and I have been having an ongoing discussion about various things, too. So.
Okay, well, these are really, you may think they're silly questions. I'm going to just start with a very basic question, if you don't mind. I've got two questions. And the first one is as I said, I was scrambling through my controversial names papers. Now, I just want to refresh my recollection. I know that this dispute procedure that we're looking at is entirely different from the string criteria issue, which was already dealt with earlier in the bigger working group. That's correct, isn't it?
I'm actually not 100% sure. There is, within the new GTLD policy, there is sort of a space created for disputes. And that the disputes would be based at the beginning of the process once the names have all been announced. So it's not the internal string criteria, do you meet the technical ones? Is it, you know, visually similar or whatever? It's once you come out of that, then basically people are able to bring up disputes on various criteria, and whether it was the geographical, the marks, or whatever, that there was a blank spot left for a dispute mechanism.
So maybe it is good to use examples, I think, Victoria. Let's say that three parties applied for names that are confusingly similar to each other. That's not in this, that would not fall into controversial, right?
Right.
Let's say that somebody applied for a trademark that belongs to someone else.
Yeah.
That wouldn't fall under controversial.
No, right.
Right. Let's say that someone applied for, and this is an area, actually I'm going to mention it, reference it, Aubrey, because it, I raised the question. Let's say that someone applies for a name that is of religious significance. Then it's very that could fall and or is obscene or is considered obscene by some or is considered profanity by some or that could fall under this.
That goes back to our definition of controversial names, which was the first thing in this report was, and this is from the last report, is a name is designated as a controversial name if it qualifies as a TLD under then prevailing string criteria. In other words, you know, doesn't start with a dash or end with a dash. Does not fall under any other reserved name category. Mm-hmm. That is, for example, the, you know, the trademark or geographical even, and is disputed for reasons other than it falls under any other reserved name category.
Right. Okay.
So that's excluding things like .fcuk, which is a trademark, even though some people might contend it was
mm-hmm.
a variant of an obscenity. And that would fall under a trademark because that has priority. Or that it infringes on prior legal rights. But I guess that would have been that one. That would have been the FCUK. But so,
okay. And I seem to remember again going back, but there's something in the draft. I found the GAC draft principles following Lisbon, but there was something in the report, the final report draft or the amended final report about the string criteria as it related to controversial names, wasn't there? Or is there not?
Well, they did have, I think, the one, and I think it's quoted in this draft, if I remember. They basically do have their statement. If individual GAC members or other governments express formal concerns about any issues related to new GTLBs, the ICANN board should fully consider those concerns and explain how it will address them. So that was certainly, and the controversial names could fall under that condition, that principle of the GAC.
It's so okay. So our underpinning is the GAC principles. So we've got, for example, 2.1, wasn't it, that they amended after Lisbon then, was that the provisions of the Universal Declaration and the sensitivities regarding national, cultural, and religious significance.
Yeah, that one is not, it's not specifically in there, or it is in there, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But basically, one of the interesting things is that when the GAC speaks of it, they speak of it in relation to the board, not in relation to dispute mechanisms within new GTLD policy. However, as part of the thing, and that's part of what I try to include in the discussion here later, is that we're trying to create a process that doesn't drop every controversial issue into the end game with the board, but indeed
yep.
has a process for dealing with it within. Now, knowing that the relationship between the GAC and the board is such that as part of the end game, that will always be a consideration. It's sort of saying, if you want to avoid that, deal with it earlier. And certainly from the perspective that I've been taking at this point in terms of scalability of the new processes, if every controversy ends up in the board's agenda, then the process won't work.
One thing I just wanted to mention, and it's relative to what we're talking about, we are asked to provide examples. So one of the things maybe the three of us can try to do is come up with, because right now the definition of controversial names is not concrete enough, and, you know, we're asking all of our recommendations to include some examples.
Oh, yeah. And, in fact, if you had looked at, I noticed that no one did. I had tried. I put up on Google, you know, basically working notes where I had listed a bunch of examples that we could work through and so on. I just didn't get to them yet at this point. I don't know if anybody took a look even at the I sent you all invitations.
Oh, yeah, I did.
And that was just sort of a working place for people to just add stuff as we went along, but it didn't quite work out that way. But
I thought that sort of what we did last time, and the water group was sort of didn't we want to avoid working by, I mean, I thought that was sort of, sorry for me to remember that, but I thought that was something we specifically avoided last time, working by way of example.
Right. This time when we got the working group, not charter, but
statement of work.
The new statement of work, right?
Included, please add examples.
Right, and had they added that in?
Right. So in other words, they're looking for examples at this point. So, and it's true, I have not added any to this part yet, but this is still just, you know, the first draft of that. And also, I didn't think that we would want examples before we actually had the process flow.
Because it's fraught with danger, as one would have thought. giving examples.
Wait. We're not giving examples. We should clarify. In this, I think we'd be giving examples of categories. And I don't think we actually have a choice to try to help people understand that a name, for instance, might be controversial because it has religious significance in a region, or it has, or it's considered profane by a significant.
Right. But that's an intrinsic example. As soon as you actually, and I think I see what Victoria is driving at, as soon as we say, for example, Mohammed might be controversial, we have made it controversial.
Yeah.
By the act of mentioning it, we do it.
Okay,
that's why I was going on things like misspelling of Nazi, because that's one of the ones that, you know, Nazi, almost everybody, it already comes to mind. So we're not creating a new example. And then I was going for the variant of, if I spelled Nazi, N-A-T-Z-I, am I still in a controversial category? And that's where I figured I was sort of coming between the sort of danger of, by mentioning it, I create it, and using one that is always on the tip of everybody's tongue anyway. And I don't know if that works for you, Victoria, that, you know, obviously if I say that Nazi is controversial, no one's going to say, oh, my God, it never occurred to me.
Yeah, exactly. But Marilyn, were you saying that we ought to be working by category in any event,
My suggestion in this particular case is that we work by category, not by specific example, because I do think it's very difficult. You know, I'm sharing this afternoon, so I've been really trying to, and I have spent a lot of time on the reserve name working group report. In other categories, specific examples are good, so let me give you an illustration. When you think about user confusion, when they look at something and it is a one and a capital O, the user could read that in certain scripts as 10.
Mm-hmm.
That is probably a useful example. But I don't think another example might be when you say that you are limiting, that you're proposing that symbols not be allowed except for the dash, showing an example of what a symbol is may be helpful. But I don't think in this case we need to give specific word examples. I think broad categories, and you'll see when we go through my suggested elements, I, for instance, said that I don't think we can predict what all the categories are. because it could be that something is proposed and one of the advisory committees leaps up and says, this is controversial for the following reasons, and we would all go, as members of the subgroup, oh, didn't occur to us that was controversial. So if we go with categories, I mean, that would be my preferred approach to it,
I see categories as having pretty much the same problem.
Okay.
as individual examples, but I'm not saying we shouldn't, because as soon as you say one category is religious, well, I'm not sure, you know, that should be a category, but we've made it one. And also then, it immediately opens up the question, well, what kind of religious term, you know, is that blessed are the meek a controversial religious name? Is that what you mean by religious controversial?
I wouldn't get to that level of granularity.
Well, no, I'm not suggesting that we do. I'm suggesting that as soon as you suggest a category, that's the next question that comes to my mind. In other words, but I agree, we've been asked to include definitions, and if we don't include definitions, then we need to include a statement as to why definitions are not appropriate. I tend to believe that, I agree with Victoria to a certain extent, that they are dangerous, and I think listing categories of things is almost as dangerous as listing specifics.
And also I note that, you know, Sid, I found this, our old report, and I'm just looking at, I know that, you know, you sort of say we're not creating, at the very start of the report that you've sent the draft of, Avery, you say there should not be a reserve name category. I think that was sort of based on part of our other work, earlier work,
yes,
as well. And so arguably, I suppose the danger is that however we do it, if we make lists of things, we're creating exactly what we said we wouldn't create, which is a list of controversial names, basically, or whether it be lists or categories or, you know, I mean, that was decided not to be done, arguably.
Well, we're not going to create a blacklist of controversial names.
Right.
But if a name is disputed, if a name is determined...
That's right. Yeah, that's what it says, exactly. If the name is disputed, then it ends up in the sort of... it ends up on a list.
It ends up on a heads-up list.
Yeah. So that would mean that we shouldn't probably make lists right now, because the dispute process will in itself create a category of unsuccessful names, right?
So I'll just express my minority opinion. I think we have to come up with some categories of controversial names in order to be able to create the dispute procedure. There's no way of scaling or identifying the qualifications of people who we need to be thinking about if we don't have some idea of what's going to go into it.
Well, that's where we have the other issue that's been the issue between you and I that we've been discussing. In the original report, we basically said that in terms of controversial names, those were put forward by advisory committee, by consensus of an advisory committee, or a supporting organization. I mean, that's what was in the first draft. And therefore, it doesn't need to be categorized because it's just, Jack says, ooh, that was controversial. And they don't need a category. It's just, for whatever reason Jack felt it was, it went into the dispute. Now, your position, and I haven't called it minority or majority because it's been, you know, me supporting the old one and you supporting something new and different, was that no, it has to be wider than just inside ICANN, that anyone, you know, individual organization, maybe there's some notion of standing, needs to be able to create one of these controversial disputes, and at that point you're forced to have categories, perhaps, although I'm not sure.
Aubrey, I don't consider this a dispute between you and I think that's important to clarify.
No, it's a difference of opinion is what I meant.
It's just a discussion.
Right, yeah.
But let me me offer some clarification, because of course this is transcribed and recorded, and so other people are looking to it as the record. So let me just offer some clarification. At this point, based on many discussions at ICANN, not limited to the LSD review discussion, but much broader than that, there is a ongoing effort to understand what broadening participation means and how people who evolve into being interested in ICANN on a sporadic basis or a longer-term basis, how they learn about ICANN and how they get involved. I look at that process as being very evolutionary and just really wonder whether it's feasible to burden the present DNSO process with being that. So right now, as I read this, the CCNSO could put forward a objection. That would let the CCTLD, but they will have to create a process to allow all CCTLD managers to come to them, because they do not fully represent all CC. The GAC, we can assume, even for governments not involved in GAC, the GAC could provide some kind of process to the other advisory.
ALAC also. I mean, ALAC is becoming structured, is having its various groups. So that is the open to pretty much anyone in the world can come through an ALAC process.
As long as
SAC, we've got RSAC, we've got all these guys.
We don't have an RSAC. We
don't have a what?
We don't have an RSAC. Are you talking about the ASO?
We're talking basically any group within ICANN at the moment, whether it's an advisor, anything that ends in AC or anything that ends in SO, is as this was originally written, able to raise a dispute.
I understand, but I'm raising a different question. Each of those groups needs to then be instructed that they need to create a process.
If they wish.
And so one of the things that this group needs to do, and that's why I don't think there's a whole lot of disagreement between you and me. I think one of the things that we need to do is to say that regardless of whether it's kept in its present wording, each of those groups needs to be advised that they need to provide a process by which a challenge could be raised. And that process doesn't exist right now.
Right, yeah. And I think it includes as part of it that it really isn't up to us to tell them how to do it. And that's one of the places where we said, for example, by consensus in the GAC, and this is one of the places where I may find myself moving off a little of saying the GAC has to do it by consensus. Well, who are we to actually tell the GAC how they do stuff?
I agree. I totally agree. I mean, is that for us to tell any of those groups?
Guys, you're a working group. Here's what it is for you to do. If you think more work is needed, then you need to say more work is needed in order to do the following, but we're not providing guidance on what the more work is.
Oh, okay. I could certainly see adding a line that the implication of this is that each group would need to come up with a process by which it could filter and present disputes. That would make a lot of sense to me.
And, yeah, I agree.
And if we do that, Aubrey, that's why I'm not sure you and I are so far apart.
Oh, okay. If that is what works for you, then we're not far apart at all. I was basically understanding you wrong, obviously, and understanding that you felt that there should be some method separate from ACs and SOs for a dispute to be raised.
Well, let me just say something. I'll just say this for the record. I'm happy with. I think we can reach pretty broad agreement on the idea there has to be a process by which other folks who are not presently member of a constituency can come through one of these other mechanisms. We're not defining the process, saying there should be one, more work would be needed, blah blah blah. The point I'm going to make, and I'll just express it as a minority opinion, is, look, the GNSO counselors, I'm not elected to play this role. And I was a GNSO counselor. I'm not now. But I do know that the qualifications for election from the constituencies did not assume this particular function was a counselor function. So, you know.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And that's one place where I sort of argued that it's a policy call, and yet it's something new. But I believe that, you know, it's something they could learn to do.
I would say, and this is where, you know, I would say it may be the task of the GNSO Council. The counselors are not elected to manage the GNSO. They are policy counsel. That's a narrow job. The council could create a process within the GNSO to ask for the ideas on how to create such a process, blah, blah, blah. So
okay, I understand what you're saying, yeah.
And it might end up that the community goes, well, we're going to add that to the work of the council.
I understand.
Okay.
It isn't currently in the charter, and perhaps that's another sentence that I can add to this process, that generally this is not an activity that is chartered, and it's not for us to say how they would charter it or how they would go about doing it, but
and
additional work would be needed in each of the responsible ACs and SOs, assuming the proposal is accepted, blah, 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 down the line, et cetera. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, certainly I'll add something like that before this afternoon.
Can I just ask a question, just to be sure that I'm following where we're at? Then, so that's how the, I mean, so just so I understand the existing proposals that are in the draft, that ever you've circulated. I mean, each of those SOs or what have you, or whatever, GAC or whatever, bring forward their disputes through whatever procedure they may determine through their own processes or what have you, right?
Yeah.
Is there then some sort of, now I'm not familiar with this RSTEP model.
Did you see the mail that Marilyn, and it might
yes.
be good, Marilyn, to do a walkthrough of that. That's the mail that Marilyn just sent through.
Yeah, I've read that.
Oh, you did. Okay.
I've read that, but of course I don't know what the usual. I don't know is. I mean, I can see
there's
that you're adapting.
There's a current one now for new technical proposals.
Right.
That basically does that, but.
No. There's a.
The new services, right, from a technical perspective.
The RSTEP is very limited and addresses new registry services. Only from the perspective of do those new registry services affect the security and stability of the internet. So one of the limitations of the is it doesn't address, does it affect competition, does it affect this, does it affect that. It's very narrow, and it's one of the main differences between what we're asking an external group to do and a different group to do. This group, the funnel goes like this. The registry submits a request to the ICANN staff. The ICANN staff look at it and go, well, we have a technical question about whether it affects the security and stability. If they don't have a technical question, the staff is free to approve the new registry service without a whole lot of further outreach or discussion. It's a very narrow constructed policy recommendation. And it has a, well, what we did, Victoria, is based on previous discussions, we took it as a example. And I say we, sorry, Tamara and I were going to work on this. Tamara's been tied up at INTA. We'll be returning on Saturday. So this is what I've been able to do, kind of like Aubrey, kind of stepping ahead, but as an individual.
Okay. Well, no, I did read it. I mean, I just have a couple of questions. I mean, first, maybe you want to talk us through it anyway, Marilyn. I don't want to jump in on you.
I would like to walk through it because I think this at least would get the airing with you and Victoria.
Yeah, I think that's good because we've pretty much, without going through it directly, have talked through what the recommendations are. But, yeah, no, I think walking through that would be good because that is the newest piece.
So, do you want me to do that now?
Yeah.
Okay. I used the RSTEP procedure roughly as a background, but it is a rough examination of the approach that the RCEP takes. So I don't, you know, I think it could be improved and maybe edited significantly. The idea is that there would be a standing group with identified experts in some categories that are known to be controversial. I'm not even sure that my number 13 is still accurate as where I raised the, no, I need to fix that because it's now 14 instead of 13. Let me just flag that for the two of you. I was proposing that this be a little bit different than the RCEP because since the scope is potentially broader than it has a security or stability question, I was proposing a chair with two vice chairs, all with different areas of expertise who could consult interactively with each other on, for instance, how to form a panel for evaluation, et cetera. I could think of three or four areas that might be viewed as controversial. It may be that there's a few more than that, but I, when I said examples, I should probably change this to be, I was proposing categories of examples, which is more accurate to what I was just talking about. I don't think that we could predict all controversial categories, so I would think that the chair, vice chairs would need to be free to say, okay, this is a new one on us, and we'll have to find an additional addition to our stable of quote-unquote experts that can be tapped. The, you know, someone could convince me that it's a chair and three vice chairs, and I'll talk just a little bit later about what I think the work of those guys is, or gals is, as opposed to the panelists. I don't think they can have other business relationships that I can. So they, I think, will have to have a contract of work, be paid a stipend, and be available on relatively short notice. And typically, somebody has to do the chairing and the convening and the writing up of the work that these panels undertake. So there has to be a methodology of doing that and of compensating somebody to do it so that it gets done in a timely manner and neutrally. But I do think they shouldn't be potential applicants for a string. They shouldn't be a registry or a registrar. The way the RCEP works is participants in the panels can have other ICANN relationships, but as I understand it, the chair takes great care on any particular application for a new registry service to make sure that direct conflicts of interest are avoided. So you could, for instance, think that someone might be a WIPO panelist on a dispute resolution procedure that wouldn't necessarily, or one of the other dispute providers, that wouldn't necessarily prohibit them from being in the expert stable list. But
Marilyn, can I jump in? Because I'm just thinking we're extending a little too much detail, given that we're sort of looking at the overall at this point. Do you mind if I just take you back and just ask you a couple of questions?
I'm happy to take questions at any point. So, what? Yeah.
I have read it. I have sort of three issues. I mean, there are three issues with it that I would like to discuss. But if we want to do a more general run through, we could do that at the end. I don't know if we need to go into the detail of conflict.
I think with the few of us, if we've all read it, and Marilyn, if you're comfortable just talking about it from the questions.
Oh,
I did suggest and I did agree that walking through it, but yeah. If doing questions works better, that's cool with me too.
Okay, well, the three things that I wanted to talk through was, I suppose there's four, actually. Just working from your proposal, I'm wondering, I suppose issue number three is something that sort of just is touches on what we've already discussed earlier. So obviously question number three is something we need to come back to. because I think that we just discussed whether or not we want to do that. I mean, I was also questioned whether or not there would be any need to have different compositions of panels or what have you, whatever tribunals, you know, whatever the tribunal is going to be. I would question whether the composition of those tribunals would need to be any different given on dependent on the category. So I just put that point down for discussion. As to the selection of panelists, to my mind, just on first blush, this did not look terribly neutral. You know, this process didn't look, and I know it's not, I mean, I know you were trying to explain the neutrality in the conflict situations and what have you, but it didn't look, well, I'm just wondering, I mean, I think there are issues about neutrality and the greater distance from ICANN, the better, and I'm wondering whether they should be retired judges or, you know, I'm just wondering if there could be some sort of international selection process from, you know, an established and recognised independent pool. I think you mentioned WIPO. I don't know, you know, if that's a possibility we can come back to. And point 14, I think that's again something we talked about already about the categories. And the only other thing that occurred to me sort of on a sort of, again, a first blush sort of look at it, is whether or not perhaps one of those, the chairs could, I don't know whether or not it's necessary or advisable, but perhaps a chair could take, you know, with all these organisations sort of bringing the disputes through dependent on their own processes, you know, that it's qualified it as a dispute, whether or not the chair, there might be some sort of preliminary determination procedure or sort of strikeout procedure where the chair or, you know, a senior panellist or what have you basically takes one look at it and says, no, we're not going to, that just doesn't qualify, we're not going to determine that, we're not going to put together a tribunal on that or something like that. So that was just another thought. And again, I think that, that my last point is that we may, I mean, it brings us all back to the same issue. I mean, the criteria are supposed to be predictable and transparent and what have you, and I'm wondering, you know, what's the panel's, what guidance does the panel have, you know, and should we be saying things like, you know, what are the predictable criteria by which they're going to make their decisions, and is that part of our work? I don't know.
Let me take them all the way through. I think on the question of differences on neutrality, when I originally wrote this last night, Victoria, I had a statement that said that they couldn't have any relationship at all with ICANN, and I went back and reviewed what the rules are for the RCEP. And that's not the nature of the requirements. As a matter of fact, I think that ICANN actually has a pretty heavy dependency in RCEP on technical people that come directly from the ICANN community.
Okay, but that's quite a different sort of issue. I mean, they're technical issues. They're quite different. And this is so controversial, obviously, that the greater neutrality and the greater distance that it, you know, I mean, I think the danger is, obviously, that people, you know, ICANN insiders are, you know, maybe perceived as compromised and then, you know, subject to political influence and what have you. And I'm just wondering, you know, I mean, just as a lawyer, I suppose it occurs to me that, you know, using some sort of existing body where you've got complete neutrals is just probably a much better idea.
I like the idea of strengthening it, and I think actually, I don't think retired judges are going to be, let me speak about that for a minute. It might be interesting to think about retired judges, but a retired judge might not necessarily be an expert in culture or in language. So,
well, which again takes us back to the other issue, doesn't it?
Well, let me just finish this thought, if I could. So I thought actually you should have if you're a range of different expertise, right? So
yep.
A retired judge might be, so one kind of expertise might be retired judge. Another kind of expertise might be expert in language. I'm very interested in the idea of strengthening the requirement of neutrality and arm's length relationship to ICANN. I think that's actually a very good thing. Aubrey, do you have a comment on that?
I actually like the idea of getting as much external as possible, although I guess I'm not quite as strong on dictating that it must be all external, and I think that once you've got a mix of people in this standing body, that basically the fact that someone is involved with ICANN or has been involved with ICANN in the past should not preclude them.
So maybe I could rewrite this to say all efforts should be made to have as much neutrality and arm's length as possible, blah, blah, blah. If exceptions are made, appropriate steps need to be taken to ensure neutrality and avoid conflicts of interest.
Right. Yeah, because one of the things we do, for example, when we look in the board or when the NomCom is looking for its people for placing, you know, look at someone like John Bing. Now, someday he won't be an ICANN counselor anymore.
Right.
But he's still, you know, a legal professor who knows a lot and, you know, could be expected to remain neutral. But knowledge of ICANN might be useful, too. So I wouldn't want to say that someone like that, because they had spent 3 years as a volunteer, you know, or, you know, someone that gets pulled into a working group who has knowledge because we go out and, you know, we get some lawyer or some ex-judge or some academic to help us do something, that at that point they immediately become tainted by ICANN and are therefore no longer qualified. And that's really the concern that I'm looking for. So, yes, someone who can be neutral, and if having served ICANN before, isn't necessarily a precluding taint.
No, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem. I suppose, you know, the real concern that I was sort of worried about is not a situation like that. I think that's right. It's more the situation where, you know, you worry that someone's influenced by, you know, that someone's too much of the community and it may be influenced by current thinking in GAC, or, you know what I mean, or may just know that so-and-so, you know, that such and such nations have strong feelings about this and, you know, just be too sort of involved in the current politics of the system.
Well, I think it makes sense to say that the members of this group should not currently be active in ICANN. You know, that perhaps is enough of that obviously you can't be on the council and in this. You can't be on the board and in this.
Mm.
And so just precluding a concurrent activity.
And do you think they can be a presently active panelist at WIPO? Which is a list of, or any of the other dispute resolution providers, which is a list of thousands of people?
I don't see why.
I wouldn't have seen a problem with that.
Okay. I think I captured that one. To the point you raised about a preliminary determination, that could be a function of that little chair-vice chair group. And that's one of the things I sort of thought they would do.
But the chair-vice chair, won't they be people who are necessarily more connected with ICANN?
I'm sorry?
Wouldn't the chair-vice chair be people who probably would necessarily be more actively concerned with ICANN? Simply because they'll be in constant during their chairship.
I see them as having a management role of this process, but not a management role within ICANN.
I agree with you that they'd have a management role in the process, but I guess I have trouble with them having I see them largely as administrative management and less as making decisions themselves. I think that puts them in a funny spot. I think that there may be reasons for a structure that allows a quick group, a small group, to sort of say, no, not valid, or to say, yes, valid, let's go further. Kind of like the way some courts do, where you get a quick panel of 2 to 3 judges who say, no standing, we're not taking this one, and saying, yes, we are taking this one, and the full court will fit.
Sure. So Aubrey, why wouldn't that work with the idea of the chair and the vice chairs?
I mean, I think the analogy, if it's any help, is sort of, you know, your chief justice or your... you know, head of the court or what have you. That, so I don't, I mean, I'm not looking, I mean, I don't know.
I guess I was just looking at it in the RSEC where, you know, you have people who are experts and may or may not be members of the ICANN community, but then you have somebody who is very knowledgeable about ICANN, like Lyman, being the chair of it. And I was kind of thinking that in this we'd end up in a similar situation where
Lyman
the chair would be more of an ICANN
yeah.
person, interface, administrator, makes this
yeah.
work, than actually an active participant.
Right.
But that's a shading.
Lyman wasn't chosen for that reason. He was chosen because of his broad knowledge of the security stability issues and his broad awareness of other knowledgeable parties in the community.
Right, and because he is eminently neutral.
Right. So, you know, why don't we take the I was asked.
I'm willing to go along with it. I'm quibbling. I wouldn't object to it being the way it was said.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't I, when I write this up, why don't I note that in the quick, there's a possibility of a quick look process in which the chair / vice chairs would, but let's just go back to something. Let's take an example. The four of us decide to complain about a proposed string that's controversial. We put it in through the council's newly established process. It comes to the chair, the vice chair, and the chair and vice chair go, well, that's not controversial. We're not going to convene a panel. What does ICANN do then? They allow the, they accept the application because these three people have said, well, we don't agree that's controversial.
Right. And then at that point, you know that, you know, obviously, one would hope that they'd say it's not controversial for some reason. And they would, either because we've already talked about that issue in the past and this is just a variant on a word we've passed on, or whatever reason they would give, that these people would give a considered reason why they weren't doing it, they just wouldn't say no, then one could expect that those who objected, who disputed, went through the process, would either be satisfied or they wouldn't. And at that point, they do end up in the board endgame again.
Okay.
We can't prevent.
Okay. This is very helpful. So what I'm going to propose is there is a quick look to accept the need to convene a panel. That quick look could result in the chair vice chairs rejecting the need to convene a panel. And then we, you know, and further work is going to be needed because remember we're not completely developing this, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're putting this into the fuller task force role. So that then the question would be, if the question is, what happens when? Because there's another question I want to come to, but this question is, what happens when the chair vice chair rejects?
Yeah, is there an appeal is the question really, isn't it? Is there an appeal from that determination?
Yeah.
Whether to the board or to a full panel or whatever.
Right. So,
but I mean, you know, the only reason I say it, as you say, there has to be a lot more work and, you know, we're just sort of sinking on our feet really, aren't we? But at the end of the day, you know, there's going to be, you know, the big issue is resources. I mean, these sort of procedures could just be absolutely busy all the time. And so there just may be a need to, you know, have some kind of filter process. Otherwise, you know, potentially anybody in the world could have an issue with anybody else's application and this, you know, the procedure could just be...
Well, that's one of the reasons why I wanted all of those for scalability purposes to have been filtered by someone which is willing to take responsibility for bringing that forward.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise, you're right, the scalability of it is impossible if it's not pre-filtered by someone who's enough of an insider to take responsibility for it.
Yeah, yep.
I was gonna say, it doesn't stop them from sending in, you know, as much of a comment as they want, and at that point, you know, yes, the board does have to take that into account. They have to look back. They have to see the due diligence was done, et cetera, you know, and that we're not going to eliminate. That is the final check that the process worked properly, and obviously if everything still ends up a controversy for the board, then the process has failed.
Yeah. And, of course, the requirement to give reasons, I think, takes us back to some of the earlier point as well. You know, will there be a criteria by which these people operate? I mean, what's the criteria?
So that's the final thing I wanted to come to. I think that what we can say is we think there needs to be some establishment of predictable and transparent criteria, but we are not trying to propose what that is. We're flagging the need to work further on that.
Yeah, and we might mention things like freedom of expression and sensitivities, like the two balancing things that kind of, you know.
I don't know what sensitivity means.
Oh, that's what GAC has said, you know.
The sensitivity is the opposite of freedom of expression.
Exactly. So there's a two, you know.
I thought the GAC made references to things like common sense.
Well, I'm just looking at the, 2.1 in their public policy.
Right.
And, you know, they refer to the Universal Human Rights Declaration, need to assume fundamental human rights and the dignity and worth of the human person, equal rights of men and women, and sensitivities regarding terms of national, cultural, geographic, and religious significance. So,
right.
You know, just on one level, you can say the two polarities of these issues are, on one side, freedom of expression, and then sensitivity on the other side.
I'm not sure sensitivity. I understand.
I don't like it. No, I don't like it. It's their word. I mean, absolutely.
No. I'm gonna say something different. I think I need to explain that a little bit more than just use the word sensitivity. But I do think, you know, you and Aubrey and I may be very far apart on the following statement that I'm going to make. I don't actually believe that just because I can pronounce a word, it needs to be a top-level domain. But, you know, that may be a difference in perspective that the three of us have, but I don't think that that's necessarily...
Well, I can repeat that statement and say, I don't necessarily believe that because I can pronounce it, it needs to be a top-level domain. But someone else might believe that, and it's not for me to say they can't. So, yeah, I can make the same statement as you. It's just that, you know, someone else might believe it needs to be, and it's not for me or anyone else to say they can't. And that's the freedom of expression side.
But the concern here, but hang on, I think it's a little, if you don't mind me just adding to this, I mean, I think, you know, we are looking at the controversial names category, right? And it is highly controversial in the sense that this procedure we're looking at allows essentially other people to impose their opinions on other people, right? So it's, you know, I mean, it involves these very sort of conflicts. And I don't think the wider issue is really, you know, it's about the ability of certain groups to impose their views on others. And so it's not, I think I would just rephrase it in that sense, in terms of that issue.
Okay. And then, but there is another thing I want to call your attention to, because it's item number 15. I don't know if this is, you know, I'm unclear, Aubrey, on, you know, so is this group's advice advisory, is it binding?
It would have to be. I mean, it would have to be.
Have to be which?
Binding, I would have thought.
Yeah, I was thinking it's...
I mean, isn't the whole point of this...
The process.
Binding
to the board, or I can't.
Well, so let me just say that actually the board could overrule.
But that makes the whole thing political, and that makes this whole process pointless. There will be no neutrality, and everything will be fully political
and
politicized,
right.
Which is entirely what we're. I mean, that will be pointless.
Yeah, except that I don't believe that within the confines of ICANN at the moment, there's anything that, because people are arguing, and this is one of the issues that came up in the new GTLD policy at the beginning, that all new GTLDs ultimately have to be approved by the board. And And
okay, well, I mean, I think that's obviously a big policy issue. I mean,
right. And
personally, I think
I lost.
I think we ought to recommend a person. I mean, I think that the board itself ought to be pleased to be removed from having some sort of veto because.
People are arguing that it has to do with their fiduciary responsibility.
Well, wait.
I didn't understand that, but that's the argument.
Yeah. But let's make a distinction here about what the board, or an individual board member, may have said they wanted versus what some people in the community are saying is the accountability and responsibility of the board, right, Aubrey?
Yeah, but I was talking about within the new GTLD policy,
right.
Basically one of, I mean, there had been a few of us who had thought that we were trying to design a process that didn't need the board's involvement.
And
basically it was a predictable and whatever process that didn't require the board doing a review. Now, if the board was only doing a was due diligence done review, as opposed to a material review, but there's no real distinguishing that.
But wait a minute. Let me go back. I've said this before, but I think it's worth restating. If a name is not controversial and it meets the criteria, I believe the new process, in fact, will take the name all the way through, and the board is not going to be making a decision.
I believe the board signature is still involved at the end of the process.
Yeah, but it's not a, but it's a, the way it's structured, it's going to be a, were all the steps met? Yes, they were. Click.
I don't believe that's been clearly stated. I believe that the board gets to review each new TLD and decide to approve or disapprove based on the process. I don't believe anyone said it's purely a formality to check that all of the process has been clearly.
I think we can go back and look at that, but my understanding was for those TLDs that GTLDs that are unencumbered by challenges, et cetera, that the board is not going to be reviewing. As a matter of fact, there needs to be an audit process which makes sure that all the steps were followed.
Well, in which case it makes sense to make that for all TLDs and not preclude that for the disputed.
But I'm one of the people who says that at the end of the day, if it's a disputed TLD, I do not see how to completely remove the board from accountability for the decision.
Okay, well, I mean, I think, you know, this is obviously getting to a fairly technical level. I mean, we were looking at the more practical question right now of whether the board should have, like, there should be a bit of an appeal to the board or a veto to the board.
So, we're looking at 15, and, you know, I mean, I would be happy to have their advice to the board as binding, but I still think that's going to mean that the board, actually, this group doesn't actually advise the board, do they? They advise earlier in the process.
They advise ICANN process.
Right.
And I had thought that at least for the ICANN process, it was binding.
Okay, that I'm fine with.
And I think the larger issue of whether the entire process can be taken to the board and politicized. I mean, this was the argument that I had made right at the beginning, that if any controversy can fall through to the board, it will fall through to the board.
All right. So Avi, what I'm going to do, if you and Victoria are okay, I'm going to change 15 to say the advice to the ICANN process is binding, and then in parentheses, the larger question of appeal.
See, I wouldn't have said it was an advice either. I would have said it, they make a determination.
Guidance is binding.
No, a determination.
Okay, I'm happy to use the word determination.
Or decision or whatever.
I'm happy to use the word determination. Okay? Okay? So what else?
Okay, well, I think there was something else we didn't really talk about. We've still got predictable criteria to come back to, right?
I thought we agreed on predictable criteria and said that we believe there needs to be the establishment of predictable and transparent criteria. We reference freedom of expression and the sensitivity
comment. Oh, okay. So we decide about that.
Note the need for further work.
Right? Okay. Okay, I think we need to have a look at the drafting of that. I mean, that would need some careful drafting. I'm just saying, I didn't think we'd agreed that wording, like, set in stone, but that was more of a suggestion.
Do you want to submit some language?
I
would add a recommendation, because so far from this conversation, I've added one recommendation earlier about, you know, how were disputes initiated, et cetera, and the one we talked about. So this would be a new recommendation, which is that, perhaps it's worth spending a couple minutes wordsmithing it while we're talking.
But it seems to me it needs to be, further work is needed, but we believe it needs to include predictable and transparent, further work is needed to develop predictable and transparent guidance to the, or guidelines or something.
Criteria, I think.
Criteria. I think it's going to have to be, I think there's going to have to be some flexibility for them as well. But did you say you could submit some language?
Well, if we're recommending, I mean, I think we could. I just wanted that freedom of expression and perhaps, you know, balancing language included. But I was perfectly happy with the language you were developing there.
Right.
We can perfect it on the list, though. We can circulate
right? Since this is just a draft, I will put in words that are similar to basically what Marilyn just said plus what, you know, Victoria said.
Okay.
And then, you know, we can talk about it some more.
Okay, good. I wanted to take you back to 14, which, Victoria, you had mentioned, and I was saying I do think some examples of categories of controversial names are needed, and I didn't understand, you had flagged that, but I didn't understand whether I had adequately addressed your question.
All right. Well, that was kind of, we addressed that the very first issue we discussed, didn't we? You know, whether or not we could come up with examples, didn't we? So did we not sort of eliminate it at that point? Did we decide that we couldn't?
I wasn't in agreement with not offering them, so I'm not sure what you mean by...
Oh, I see. I thought that we went back to the original, the earlier statement, the earlier sort of report, the full working group report, and also... the draft, which says that, you know, there should not be a reserved names category, but just a list of disputed names as a result of the dispute process, and sort of 14 would be inconsistent with that.
Okay, I don't understand that inconsistency. I don't understand how to create the panels, or if there's not a way to say, for example, the kinds of categories that may be viewed by some as controversial could include the names of religious people, etc. So how do we create the panel? How do we tell the panelists what their job is?
That's what the criteria would do, right? Which is about the further work.
The criteria is, I think, how do you make a determination
as to what's controversial? So, you know, there's just like a criteria by which they can work to decide in any given situation whether something's controversial, and you're alternatively suggesting creating a list of examples. I think they're going to be smart enough to not need a list of examples. There should be something in writing that's transparent and predictable, I think, you know, a criteria to point to, but I think at a number of levels the decision has been made that there shouldn't be a list.
We're not making a list of controversial names.
Well, actually, we would be. Whether you say it's by example or not, that's exactly what it would be. I don't think it's necessary. They're going to be, you know, really intelligent people. I just don't think it's necessary, and I think it's restrictive. We can agree to disagree on that, I guess.
Okay, sorry, I was trying to wordsmith while we were talking, and I missed where the point of disagreement was.
Okay, we're talking about whether or not to whether or not point 14, which wants to create a list of examples of controversial names, is necessary, or whether or not it's actually contrary to the decision not to have a list of controversial names.
And actually, Victoria, I would refer you to 3 as well, where it's mentioned as well.
Yeah, I think I raised that. Yeah, exactly. And I raised that as well, exactly.
Doesn't creating the thing that I was just working on trying to write, the recommendation, where we are creating open and transparent criteria, supersede the requirement to create categories? Now, the work that's done in creating these criteria may indeed decide that in the end you've got to create categories. It may also decide that, no, one can create criteria in some way without having to be explicit about categories or examples. And doesn't that really become part of the continuing work that needs to be done, and as opposed to defining now that to define the open and transparent criteria that protect freedom of expression, dignity of the human being, and sensitivities, etc., you know, they may or may not decide to use.
So here's my proposal. To strike 3 and to change 14 to describe that further work is needed to, and I think that we have to figure out where we're going to insert your redrafting. And then we can leave the question open of whether the establishment of criteria may lead to the emergence of patterns that are being disputed, and just not make a not go into this. I will just say that the idea of developing a budget for this, however. We need to then, I think, go back and spend more time on the definition of the qualifications for the participants, and give some examples of who we think might be possible participants, just generally at a very high level, so that a budget can be developed.
Yeah, the whole idea of how a budget for this thing is created is, it's sort of separate from that issue, though, isn't it? Isn't the issue of a budget more related to a statistical, how many of these do we think we're going to get, and what sort of effort will it take to process them, than actually the mapping to the criteria?
Aubrey, if you don't know what the general categories are that you consider controversial, you can't do any kind of speculation about how many of these you're going to get.
Well, yeah, you can.
Okay.
I mean, you can basically...
Give me an example.
I mean, okay, there's the pessimistic version that sort of says, you know, almost anything that you say someone will consider controversial. Now, we're putting in scalability that says, okay, yeah, but they've got to be filtered. So we can basically... You know, I mean, it's a guess, it's a finger in the wind, but it's basically saying half of them, a quarter of them, 10%. But knowing the criteria isn't going to make it any more accurate, because we could say the criteria are religious terms, but that doesn't tell us what percentage of new GLDP applications will be religious terms.
Okay, so
we can say the criteria is dirty swear words. Again, we don't know what percentage of applications will be dirty swear words. So it's a finger in the wind. I'd say, you know, assume 20%. It you know, and maybe this is something where ICANN has some experience from past applications and knows, or maybe this is something that, you know, we can look at .com and sort of say, since .com is sort of a we'll take anything, we can look at it and say, out of, you know, the world of second-level domain names, how many are, by any criteria, controversial?
So, Avi, here's what I take out of this. You and Victoria want to really treat this as pretty much a blank slate because you're concerned that if you give examples of categories, you're going to bias people. So, okay. I heard
it's
that.
It's basically the social Heisenberg principle, that as soon as we say it, it's real.
I heard you say that. I understand it. I've grasped it. Okay.
Sorry.
There's this thing called selling past the close. So I struck 3. I struck 14. I'm going to propose to include under further work the question of there needs to be the development of criteria for the background of the panelist. At this point, the subgroup has not been able to do any scoping or scaling of the possible number of such applications that might be received.
Okay, yeah.
Okay?
Yep. Mm-hmm. By the way, I can also read you at a point when we get to it what I've put down as our recommendation E.
Okay, and I want to do that, but I want to call one more thing to both of your attention, because it's something that I'm happy to have a minority statement from either one of you on, but my understanding of this from the previous work in the full task force is that we expect, and that's 8 and 10, 8, 9, and 10. 8 is based on the idea that, you know, people need to be paid, they can be held accountable. I'm not suggesting a huge payment, but I did do some research on what the present process is. It would be something like a stipend to the chair, and then a fee that's paid to a panelist when they're actually doing work.
And there's possibly another piece of this that you may want to add, and maybe this needs to be a minority, maybe not, but that perhaps one has to pay to dispute. I mean, if applicants, you know, this is something that's come up various times, whether it's in a different context in the PRO or in other places, that, yes, the applicant has to pay more, but also maybe the person that's raising the dispute has to pay, and that the cost for a dispute needs to be split between applicant and disputant.
Oh, I see. Okay, that's interesting.
And I don't know, but if we're going to make the applicant pay because I've disputed them, well, maybe I should have to split that payment.
And can I ask a question as an example? So would you see the idea that a name is a geopolitical indicator and is objected to by governments?
Which would be a different category than this, but yeah.
I just want to be sure. But let's take a name, let's take Nazi, misspellings of Nazi, example, referenced. The dispute to that could be a group of civil society, it could be survivors of the Holocaust, it could be government. How would you see sharing the cost working in that situation?
I believe they would form a coalition and they'd have to figure it out.
Given that, can I just ask a question? Are we really supposed to really go to this sort of level of detail at this stage? I mean, in terms of
the more detail we can go to,
is it? Okay.
The better in some sense. I mean, we keep saying more work and we can say that these are just guidelines on what it might be like. But I think
we could say initial preliminary discussions included topics like the following questions, and they need to be fleshed out in the more work.
Yeah. And in other words, so we could include a shared payment arrangement for this, and the details of how that would work are something that, you know, need further.
Well, you know, this kind of goes back to the question that I had earlier, which you're going to perhaps a solution to a question that I had earlier, and that was, what gives somebody standing, and how do we avoid having a test for standing?
Right. Well, that's, and my solution to that was everyone has standing with some AC or SO.
Right.
And it's the AC and SO that basically determines standing.
So what I'm probably going to do is put this into questions that need to be that could be addressed in the more work category.
Yeah.
Victoria, is that okay with you?
Yeah, fine.
Okay. Then I want to call Tim to your attention. My assumption is, regardless of whether it's a shared cost or not, we did talk in the full PDP task force that applications for GTLDs are expected to be cost recovery to ICANN. That's an existing small policy, not big policy. That's an existing small policy. And then I just want to mention something, Victoria, that you won't, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but there has been a conversation between myself, Milwaukee, Aubrey, and Neil Blair about the possibility of there being different ways of dealing with some parts of the cost, in particular for people from developing countries.
Right, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
But this, part of the discussion we had, I recall some of the discussion we had, Aubrey, where, you know, it's like if you pick a controversial name, you as an applicant need to understand there may be more cost to that.
Right.
And so your fee is actually not the standard fee, which is supposed to be predictable and transparent, but it would have to include the cost. I called it compensation. That may be the wrong word. Maybe it's
I've tried to distinguish that on basically that the slow path fee, the fast path fee was predictable.
Right.
And the slow path fee, so if for whatever reason you're putting yourself into the process that requires many panels, many reviews, many whatever,
right,
that you're incurring extra cost.
Okay. So
and so if you want an easy one, you go for X, Z, Z, Y.
So I'm going to change this to say applicants should expect that their fees rather than application fees.
Right. And you might want to add the other one that sort of says, you know, there is a recommendation or disputants should share the cost of a dispute in a manner to be determined by further work or something.
I didn't accept that as a recommendation.
Okay.
I accepted it as under more work, examination of how the cost will be recovered, should it be shared, et cetera.
Right, but I was just saying that it sort of goes along with the one that you're changing now when we're saying that the applicant's got to pay if they're going to be. Remember, an applicant might not think they're picking something controversial.
That's why I changed it to say applicants should expect that the fees will include the cost associated with the CNDRG, but not discuss whether that money has to come from them or could come from a shared process. And then include under more work the idea that more work could be that more work needs to be done about that. Let me take a crack at it.
Yeah, okay. So you're going to resend me your list, because I already cut your old list into my report, but the one I was going to send out just before the meeting. But if you send me a new one, I'll cut that in its place.
I'm going to make as many quick changes as I can before 1:30 for you.
Okay, and I've got until 2. Okay, so if you send it to me at 1:30, then just before 2, I'll send out an updated copy. I can.
Okay, can we go back to this to the overall report for just a minute?
Yep. Okay. At the moment, I've now got. A through E in recommendations.
Okay, can I A through B?
A through E.
A through E. Well, what page am I supposed to?
Those, well, I only had A through, that's on page 5.
Oh, okay, sorry.
At the beginning, I only had 3. I've added 2. And I can read them to you guys if you'd like.
Please, thank you.
Okay, so D, I left the first 3 alone. D. Within the dispute process, disputes would be initiated by the ICANN advisory committees, for example, ALAC or GAC, or supporting organizations, for example, GNSO or CCNSO. As these organizations do not currently have processes for receiving and deciding on such I said activities, that might not be the wrong word, these processes would need to be defined. As it is not the prerogative of the GNSO or its subcommittees to determine the internal processes of other ICANN bodies, this remains as work that needs to be done if and when this proposal is accepted.
I'm happy with that. I have some changes in C, but can we go to E first?
Sure, okay, then E.
But wait a minute, I didn't mean to cut Victoria off.
Okay.
No, I was fine with that.
Okay. E, further work is needed to develop predictable and transparent criteria that can be used by the controversial names resolution panel. I'll get it right. These criteria must take into account the need to, bullet, protect freedom of expression, bullet, affirm the fundamental human rights and the dignity and worth of the human person and the equal rights of men and women. That was taken from the
Yeah.
And yep. Third bullet, take into account sensitivities regarding terms with cultural and religious significance.
Mm-hmm.
I left out the geographical and other one because they weren't relevant to this particular statement.
So, okay, I'm okay with that. I have some changes on C.
Okay, the C was its current. The new GTL dispute process should be based on the existing RSTEP process, which should be a separate. Okay, yeah, now that you're suggesting one.
Right.
Right. Okay, what would you like it to say?
So I think you could say the new GTLD controversial names, whatever we call it.
Controversial names dispute.
Resolution.
Resolution.
Panel?
Panel, I think you called it.
Yeah. Okay. should be established.
Should be established
as a standing mechanism.
Yes.
That is convened at the time a application that is considered controversial.
Well, at the time that a dispute is initiated.
Okay, that a dispute is initiated. And then we could say, preliminary elements for that process are provided in this recommendation, but need to be referred for further work. But further work is needed. We need to.
Right, right. So preliminary elements of that process, of that process, are provided, but further work is needed in this area.
Right, and then we could just say. Then we could just keep the reference in the draft concepts that we have used the RSTEP process as a point of reference.
Okay, but that doesn't go into the recommendation itself.
I don't know that it's needed anymore.
Okay, fine. That's fine with me. How are you? So let me read what I wrote. The new GTLD Controversial Names Dispute Resolution Panel should be established as a standing mechanism that is convened at the time a dispute is initiated. Preliminary elements of that process are provided, but further work is needed in this area. Does that work for both of you?
Yeah, we probably need to say where they're provided. We could say provided in Annex 1.
Well, I won't get, I'll just put XXX, because that'll be what Liz does to move things around.
Right, got
so
it.
So are provided within or are provided in this report.
And, right, good, okay.
And I'll let Liz determine exactly where they are.
Okay.
Okay, so those are, now, one of the things I probably won't do after this discussion, I won't do before the meeting, after this discussion I think I have to add more content to the overview and discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't get that done.
Right.
Necessarily before the meeting. I mean, I'll look through it, and if I can, what I can get tweaked, I will get tweaked, but.
So really, if you just go to page 8, if you don't get it redrafted, that you could just point to the fact that the group, that the subgroup worked out, actually a consensus approach to how to address this. And it's, you can reference it in the recommendation, right? But note that you're going to provide more written detail, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I mean, if you've got any specific changes that you're recommending.
And then it's just what we agreed to, that you captured in the recommendation. You can almost, I think, replace this last bullet with or add the recommendation in the body too. Where you said that each of the groups needs to develop a procedure?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, no, I'll look at that and I'll try to adjust it in a reasonable way.
And D on page 9?
D on page 9. Okay, although...
I just don't know what that means. Restate recommendations?
That was from the, that was from our statement of work.
Okay. Okay.
So what I'm doing there is, as you've seen above, I'm the underlined ones, I'm repeating our statement of work and how we address that particular statement of work in this report.
Okay. Under the summary of relevant information sources?
Yeah, I haven't done anything there.
So I would give you two bullets. One is obviously the GAC principles.
Yeah.
The other, I think, is actually the previous discussions and work related to this topic that took place in the full task force, which are available in the transcript.
Previous discussions work related to controversial names done by the previous RN working group?
No, the task force.
Oh, yes, done by...
Task force PDPO5.
Done by 2DTLD task force, as opposed to using that.
Right.
And then back principles, anything else people have, just send it to me and I'll add them later.
Great. Terrific. And by the way, Victoria, welcome back.
Thank you.
Thanks
for being so patient with me, because I'm sorry I'm not up to date with everything.
And if you read through this and see other things that need editing, especially after I send the next one, please then, you know, send me specific edits or send a list specific edits. You don't actually have to do them in the document. It's probably easier for discussion purposes to send an email with the text that you think has changed. But please, you know, the more discussion we have in the next 2 days, and that's just this. This will go away again, you know, in less than a week.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, great. Look, nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you, and thank you. And thank you, Marilyn.
Sure. Thanks, Abby.
Okay,
Bye.
Hi, Glenn. Bye. Glenn.
Hi.
Hello. Everybody gone? Okay, I guess I'll hang up then.